gamblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here, and thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing IG at Rambling and Gambling, and the old email, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode is about being a bookmaker. We've had a ton of gamblers on, so I wanted to spend some time focusing on the other side of things and have a bookmaker on. Got the perfect guy for it, Dave Sharapan. He's a veteran offshore and Vegas odds maker. He's on the Cash Considerations podcast. He's on the Bostonian versus the Book pod. We're going to talk about what it was like taking bets from Floyd Mayweather and Larry King, of all people. We're going to talk about how bookies come up with lines. We'll talk about the single most popular prop bet of the year, every year. And we'll talk about the biggest bet Dave ever took. It's a really good story. I hope you stick around for that one. It's towards the end. Here he is, Dave Sharapan. Dave, I have got a ton of questions for you about how bookmakers do what they do. I want to get into the process of it all, but we have got to start with your insane background. How in the world did you become a bookmaker in Curacao, in the Caribbean, at what, age 26, 27?
I was 26, yes, sir. So I grew up in Pittsburgh, graduate school, Penn State, broadcast journalism degree. Come home, can't really find a full-time gig. I'm a sports producer, KDK TV in Pittsburgh. I'm helping the family business. Downtown was a store called Rouse Discount. I'm refereeing hockey games. I'm doing anything I can. I'm selling women's shoes, whatever. And in Pittsburgh, I mean, as it is probably in a lot of places, especially back east, I mean, this is how you grow up. I've been around it my whole life and not really known. But then once you get a little bit older and you're actually – you know, helping guys do stuff, you realize what you're doing. I'm around the business and around people. And someone says to, you know, someone that I know, hey, you know, do you know a guy who might want to go down to the Caribbean and help me run an offshore sports book? So a guy knows a guy, knows a guy, and I'm the guy. And I'm like, man, I don't know. I'm the oldest of five. I got to explain to my mother that I'm going to go work in a bookie joint in the Caribbean. And I'm like, yeah, I say no the first time, Josh. I'm like, nah, it was going to Aruba. And I was like, man, I always want to live where there's palm trees growing up back east. It was like, man, like, how am I passing this up? Covering a high school football game in late November, shot sheets getting wet. It's that wintry mix that we're all used to. And I'm like, decided the second half, it turned to snow. It was going down my back. I decided that day I'm going. That's it. So I go home that night, call the 800 number to the guy that's running the place. He's like, I said, does the offer still stand? I'm coming. And he said, yeah, you know, you got to come down, you know, right after New Year's. Perfect. So January 97, I pick up and I go to Curacao. And I got a PhD in the business. I mean, I learned everything from the ground up. You know, I had to answer the phones and learn how to, you know, take bets and learn how to do rundowns and learn how, I mean, the guy threw me, you know, right in the deep end and said, you're going to sink or swim. And it turned out it was okay. And before you know it, we're learning how to, you know, do, you know, power ratings and make numbers and go back and forth and do futures. And basically having been someone who was like betting, but really didn't know anything. And that's my thing that I say now, nobody knows squadoosh is the word I'll use here, but it's really, it's nobody knows it how much work it is, but I got it all.
If I'm not mistaken, you worked at a book called ABC Island Sports for about 18 months. Is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Take me through what your day-to-day looked like there specifically, because I think a lot of people hear the term offshore book and they may get something in mind that's a little more glamorous than it really is. What was that like?
Was an office. I mean, it was probably like a lot of offices that have been in place in a lot of places here in the United States that have had to move every 2 weeks or every month, like you see in movies. It was an office park right across the street from one of the most beautiful beaches I've ever seen, called Mambo Beach. And we drove by this beach. We parked the car. I was there by 8 o'clock in the morning. I didn't leave until 11 o'clock every night. So when the last game tipped, it was a room full of phone operators. We didn't have apps. We didn't have any wagering. People had to call an 800 number, Josh, and actually give their account number and then their password. And then they could get the lines. They could make their wagers, which were all someone held a phone like this and typed the bets like this. And then when the bets were done, they said, sir, what is your account number and password? That was your confirmation that what, you know, they got the read back. And then they said, you know, 12530 Josh. Boom. Thank you, sir. Click, hang up, all the bets posted. And I started literally on the phone. I mean, the first day that I got there, I flew in. The next day, they're like, all right, get on the phone. Get on the phone. Do what? He said, answer the phone and type what they say into the computer. Okay. So you did that all day. You graded the games as they went final. You ran a report at the end of the night. You went home. And you did it again the next day. It was a big, I guess, conference room. It wasn't even really a conference room. It was just a big room full of operators and desks and phones and with a couple TVs. That was it. We had an odd screen that we used as a guide. We were actually on the Don Best screen back in the day. So, you know, we could see lines from Vegas. We could see lines from other offshore places. And boom, we were booking games. And we did that. And then we morphed into doing some advertising, and we had a sales office, which was just a little cubbyhole next door. You know, they answered the sales calls, and people called and said, hey, how do I send money to you? We created a little accounting office, which was what would have been the kitchen of this conference area. All it was a counter that was separate from the phone room, so the guy could actually concentrate and do the money in, money out transactions. He was back there. And we did this every day. The phones rang like noisily all the time. So you heard the phones ringing as games got closer, you know, like 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock Eastern. I knew what time it was by the phone room. It was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was very quiet. We could all talk and hang out, eat lunch, whatever. But by like 3 o'clock Pacific, which would be 6 o'clock Eastern, phones started ringing. The last hour was just constant ringing phones, people talking, yelling out bets, limit bets, moving number, this and that. And that's what we did every day. It was amazing.
Was it mostly Americans calling down to you guys or locals?
We did have no locals. It was all, we took Americans, Canadians. We had people in Europe calling. It was an 800 number. So you could, wherever you got the number, at one point I had to hire people. I mean, it was crazy because in Curacao, they speak 4 different languages. They speak Spanish, Dutch, English, and Papiamento, which is the local language mix of the 3. So when someone from Spain or you know, somewhere called that spoke Spanish, I had Spanish-speaking people that would answer their, you know, take their bets and do it that way. I remember we had someone found us in Israel, and they were calling from Israel, and their English was not very good. And I didn't have anybody to speak Hebrew, but we worked through it, and we took the bets that way. We were taking bets all over the place. It was the market was wide open. Wherever anyone found the number could dial an 800 number, as long as they had the money, you know, posted up in their account, they were able to bet.
You pretty much had to turn a profit at the book in Curacao, correct? And I'm asking this because in Vegas, for instance, you have a bad day at the book. I imagine they could offset that sum with, you know, the blackjack table, shows, restaurants, that kind of thing. But Curacao, an offshore book, you just have the book, correct?
Correct. There was no anything. That was the business. So you want 100%. I use the term booking out of your pocket. I mean, this is what bookies have done for years. I mean, there's no dice games to offset it. There's no show tickets to offset it. There's no buffet or hotel rooms that you can write off and offset losses. You're booking out of your pocket every single day, every single bet. And I think that at the time was the best thing to learn the business, because you couldn't really, you had to be good at your job. And you, if you weren't, if somebody was beating you or getting better numbers or things like that, you had to figure out why. And the guy that I, you know, went down and worked for was so far ahead of so many people and so many things. He never threw anyone out. I never tossed anyone for any. You set a limit. You gave the limits. If guys beat you, you paid them. If they lost, they paid you. It was very simple. It was just and then if they were really good at NBA totals, you figured out why, and you had to either get on their side or just beat them to a number, you know. And no, and so I learned how to do it. What I said was like in the big leagues, and then kind of worked backwards from there.
Okay, let's move to Vegas. Although I should mention, I have spent a little bit of time in Curacao. Mambo Ooh. Beach, which you mentioned, not only beautiful, nightlife out there. Oh. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. It's. I mean, if people are looking for an off-the-beaten-path vacation, that Mambo Beach, I will never forget Mambo Beach.
Right.
I mean,
it's really, really nice. And at the time, it was really a European destination, and it still kind of is. It's a great place to go diving, snorkeling. Yeah. It's a very laid back, chill place, and it's a Dutch island, so you get people from all different walks of life there. Fabulous place. I mean I learned island time is a real thing. I mean, you know, we used to get the USA Today Monday paper on Wednesday. You would go to McDonald's to get lunch. There was one, it took 30 minutes to get your lunch at McDonald's. Slow doesn't do it justice. So it slowed me down in life and really made me realize what was important in so many ways outside of the book, just in that regard, that you don't get when you grow up in America and everything we're doing is fast, 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 go, 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 work, work, work. A daily siesta from noon to two every day, everything shut down. They made you leave work and go spend time with your family or all go eat at a restaurant. It was the only places open was a restaurant from 12 to 2 every day. Really put things in perspective.
Okay, so ultimately you end up in Vegas. Yes. You listed some of the places you work. You worked. Hey, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think these were all of the books that you worked at. Golden Nugget, M Resort, Cosmo, Venetian, William Hill. Did I get that right?
So right before we get sold to William Hill, I didn't go work for them. So that was the one that, you know, on September 1st, 2020, we transferred everything over. All the customers, all the files, all the futures, everything.
How did your Vegas experience working at books there differ from your experience working at a book in the Caribbean?
So, I mean, one, the Caribbean stuff, the volume was incredible. Like, you know, I mean, growing up and coming home in summers and stuff, you'd always answer the phone for guys and you kind of listen. You know, at card games, you listen to bookies talk about their business and their volume and like how they let players bet. When we were offshore, there was we were the rules. So we set the rules. We told everybody the rules. If we wanted to change something, we did. You know, if we wanted to increase the limits, we just did. If we wanted to add markets, we did. In Vegas, everything's regulated. Nevada Gaming Commission controls everything. So if you want to change the font on your software, you have to have a meeting to have a hearing to get on the board hearing to then change it, to then get it approved to be changed. And then something as simple as that could take 6 months. So the actual process of having it looked at by everybody versus having it looked at by nobody was one major thing. Two, the volume was incredible offshore because it was, you could take bets from everywhere. Nevada was Nevada only. So people had to come. So learning how to, what the term was, book to faces, Josh, as opposed to just a number and a password. I didn't know anybody from Adam. I did not know what one person looked like other than what was on their ID that they had to send us to confirm their identity. So I knew that, you know, account number 206 Flash was really good with first half totals. And if he bets up, I better move it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So booking to voices and numbers versus booking to faces in Vegas. I mean, you got to know what I call the bag guys, BAG in Vegas. These are guys that walked around with a fanny pack with 50,000 cash on them. And if they came and bet, you knew. And those were the two major differences right away.
Let's talk about process. Let's say the Eagles are taking on the Cowboys this weekend. How do you go about setting that line?
Oh, man, it all depends on, you know, what time of season it is. Is it opening game, mid game? You check injuries. You have everything. The process is different for everybody. Like, there's guys that are strictly power ratings guys. So you start the season with power ratings top to bottom, and you kind of adjust those as they go, injuries and stuff, week to week. And then if you have Eagles 81, Cowboys 84, the game's in Dallas, it's -3 on your power ratings. Dallas has a 1-point home field advantage, 1.5 points, depending on when it is or whatever. They're full strength, but no injuries. 4, 4.5, put it up and go. Other guys did it on, I mean, like, I learned how to do it on a napkin. I mean, we used to just sit and talk. Me, the guy that ran the place, and one other guy, we would sit, all right, go through the schedule right now. Give me your number, give me your number, give me your number. You sit there and almost like make a case, like a courtroom. Why are you at 3? I have 4.5. Okay, well, this is why. Well, I don't believe you, or I don't think they're going to bet that. Let's use the higher number. Okay, and you do it that way. So now it becomes so kind of, for me, it's hard to explain the process because my process is different than a lot of people's. Like, I just, you know, when I came back into the risk room after I was traveling back and whatever, they'd be like, Dave, where's your power ratings? And I would just point to my head. I go, right here. What are you talking about? I don't have files. I kept everything on paper and pen. I was old school. The guy that sat in front of me, you know, his name was Tom. He was in his 60s. He refused to put anything in a computer file ever because he said, I have it right here. He kept the paper schedule books with all the scores by hand to adjust his power ratings by hand with a #2 pencil, Josh. He wouldn't even use a pen. I said, what if this smudges? He said, I know what the number was yesterday. I mean, so they were like artists that you can't explain the process. You just wake up and you have a Rembrandt. You know what I mean? So it's way different, and it's hard to maybe explain how do you make Eagles Cowboys line.
When you were booking, did you always try to get a 50-50 split on money coming in on either side of the bet? No. Never. See, that, I think that's a common misconception. Explain why not.
So, I mean, in an ideal world, you put up a number and say it's Eagles, Cowboys, Cowboys -4. You get half the bets on the Cowboys. You get half the bets on the Eagles. The juice is 10%. You go like this. As long as the game doesn't fall 4, you make the money. You know, because say you get $1,000 on Dallas -4, which means 1,100. You get $1,000 on the Eagles +4, which means 1,100. If they're betting the juice, you pay out 1,000. You keep 1,100. You make $100 for every 1,000. So that's 10%. But you don't do that. When I was offshore and you know, this is when I had a little more control in Vegas, you kind of book with an opinion is the term. So you'll see a lot of times you start a number maybe a little bit higher, and I call it a price discovery, where are the bad guys going to come in on the underdog? So the line, maybe we argue it should be -4 on Dallas. Well, let's put it 5. Boom. One of those guys bets it. They take Eagles +5. Now we know that's where they're going to bet it. So we go to 4.5 or we go to 4 and we sit. And 80% of the bets may come in on Dallas -4. Books are okay with that. We'll need the other side because we know that's who they're on and that's where we can go get the money. Now you can reduce your risk anytime you want. Just go up to 5. Go to 4.5. So just move the line. Take the bet, maybe slide the money line up a little bit, get some Eagles money line. You can mitigate the risk all you want if you have the volume. The difference now is with all of these books, maybe not everybody has the volume to do that. So would they rather have a 50-50 proposition and just keep a certain percentage, a fixed percentage? Yes. But I think you give yourself a bigger advantage as a book to have positions. Listen, books like to gamble too. The whole business is a gambling business. The book would love with a 10% VIG, which is a standard minus 110, you only have to be right half the time. They're laying the juice, not you. You're going to make money. Now, if your positions win more than they lose, 54%, 55%, now you're talking really making money.
Okay, this is a great segue into something else that I want to talk about. We actually kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but big issue in gambling right now, people being limited in what they can bet. Here's a quick clip. I want to play a quick clip. It's from back in September when we had noted pro bettor who I love, Spanky, was on the pod. And then I've got a question for you afterwards, Dave. Sure. Here's the clip.
For brain, and if you show any aptitude of winning, then, you know, you're shown the door, you're severely limited. You know, of course, you know, when you see all these ads, oh, bet MGM, you could bet like a king. No, you only could bet like a king if you're a dummy, if you're a sucker, if you can't win. Once you could win, you're not betting like a king. You're going to get kicked in the ass like a bum, and you're going to be shown the door.
I've heard some variation of this from a ton of pro bettors. They don't all put it as eloquently as my guy Spanky. Right. But what's your response to this, Dave, as somebody who's been on the other side of things? You were a bookmaker.
Yeah. Oh, I believe me. I know Spanky well. He's right. I mean, it sucks. It's the business has changed. There used to be a give and take. It's a cat and mouse game. And if, you know, the sharp guy, the wise guy beats you to a number, you tip your hat and you move it and you try to get on his side. If you don't, it's not a zero sum game. Someone has to win to keep the business going. If you go and you beat everybody, what do you have? You have no book. You have no business. So I think the business is a give and take, and you have to really, I think the relationship between sharp bettors and books used to be a little more understanding is the word. Maybe there was a mutual respect that I think the proliferation of books and the lack of personal relationships and touch, because now we're back to everything's a number, everything's just a face, and the sharp guys are better at it than a lot of books are. That's the other thing. They can do this better. If they want to get down more, they have to figure out ways not just to get a good number, but how to get down as much as they can get down at that number. They're better at it. They've been, the term is bearding. They've figured out ways to get around limits in books and stuff like that. I know exactly what they're doing. And I know why they're doing it, because they can't get quite a fair shake, because now you get profiled very, very quickly. And a guy like Spanky will bet something at -7, and maybe one time out of 20, it'll go down. Otherwise, what he bets at -7 will close higher than -7. And a lot of times books go, well, this guy never bets a bad number. I don't want to take his action and kick him out. Kick him to the curb, just like he said. It's terrible, because they don't always win. You still, not only do you have to get a good number, you have to win. Now, beating the closing line historically has been a way to measure success. That's fine. You still can't win every game. Just because you got the best number, I've seen guys be very good at getting good numbers. They don't always win. You need the business. I think a volume business, you need people that win in your business to succeed. And unfortunately, in this space right now, for a number of reasons, it's not always personal. Like, that's the other thing that I think guys like Spanky, like, they don't understand. It's not just them. They're just a number on a screen or a line on a report that this guy has to be limited. A lot of those limited messages are automated, Josh. Do you think the book doesn't want to take a $100 bet on the Masters? Of course it does. But you've been profiled. Your account has been profiled that when you make a bet, you're good for $9.20 at that number. The rest has to be approved by a human being. It's not the right way to do business. And it's probably, I joke that I'm over a million reasons why I'm glad I'm more in the media now than actually in a risk room booking the games, because I would be the guy defending the player. I would be the guy saying, guys, we can't do this. This isn't the way, this is not the way you do business. Like, you're kicking them out. They don't even know why. Have a discussion, at least figure it out. See if you can meet on middle ground and say, listen, you're too good at this for me, but I still want you to bet here. If you give me the first play, maybe I can give you X. If you don't want to give me the first play because you got bigger limits somewhere else, I'll give you Y every time you play here. I'll give you a nickel every time you play. Do you want that? Like, I would try to work with the guy to not lose the business, because every guy that leaves and badmouths you and has a social media presence and everything else is another brick taken away from your wall.
Dave, this is great. I want to throw some kind of random stuff at you now. You're doing okay on time, right? You can hang with me.
I told you, you got me for as long as you need.
You're amazing. Thank you so much. All right. So you do this awesome thing on Twitter. You call it Story Time from the Book. I absolutely love it. I did a deep dive preparing for this interview on your Story Time from the Book. Could you please hit me with your story time quickly about Larry King? You took a bet, several bets, I believe, from Larry King. Give me that.
So you never know who you're going to meet in the book. And it's one of my favorite places that I've been where, you know, someone's just betting. Like, you know, when you go to the beach, everybody looks the same. Everybody's in a bathing suit. You don't know who's who. So I'm working in the book, writing tickets at the Golden Nugget. Guy comes up to make a horse play. And he's got a hat pulled down low. He's got his racing form in his hand. Coffee stain on his player members only jacket. Looked like anyone else. And he comes up. And I take his bet in the first race at Aqueduct. And I'm like, man, I think that was Larry King. As he walks away, I'm like, I think that was Larry King. So I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm looking at him sitting there reading a form, and I'm like, that is definitely Larry King. I'm gonna say something when he comes back up. Comes up the second race, and he goes, Aqueduct race two. And I'm like, Larry? Dave from Pittsburgh, how are you? Like, I used whatever his line was opening, and he looked up, and his eyes lit up, and he was like, wait a second. You know, I'm like, you're Larry King. Yes.
Right. Of course I know.
And he's like, all right, well, you know, it was me and him in the book. There was no one in the book. It was just like a July morning. It was early. He was by himself. And so he's like, I'm going to be here all day. You know, I said, Larry, you need a couple of drink tickets, you know, whatever. So we go back and forth. It's a shame. He doesn't cash a ticket the whole morning. He cannot pick a winner. He's mothering. He's looking up at the screen. He's second and third when he has an exacta. He's second, you know, first, second, and fourth on a trifecta. He's just missing. But we go back and forth. He comes up the next time. We start talking about baseball. And he starts telling me something about the Brooklyn Dodgers and all this other stuff. And it was just one of those moments that, like, I'll never forget. And I had a lot of experiences like that with people that are famous, and, you know, they're in the book just gambling, and they're in the book just picking winners. It was so much fun.
I'm gonna hit another famous person in a second. But like I said, I've got some random stuff for you that I want to ask you about. You were in Dave Purdom's column a couple of weeks back. Dave's a friend of the pod, ESPN. Yeah. Dave Purdom. He's been on a couple of times. Listeners may be surprised to learn the single most popular prop bet of the year every year is
the coin flip
of the Super Bowl.
Every time. Heads or tails.
Why?
Man.
Why? Tell me about that.
Because everyone has an opinion on that. You don't have to know Cooper Kupp's average rushing yards or whether, you know, Jamar Chase is going to have six receptions or not. But you can know heads or tails. Everyone has flipped a coin and made a call heads or tails, and that's how it starts the game. So when someone brings someone into the book, that there's always one in the group that is the gambler, and they bring their friends in, and it's like, whoa, you look at the board, it's all of this intimidation. You get these sheets, you have no idea what to do. Well, what can I bet? You bet the coin flip and you bet the MVP. Those are by far the two most popular bets, and it's coin flip because it's quick, it's first, and it's done. I can bet heads or tails. So, I mean, I've taken a $50,000 bet on the Super Bowl coin flip. It's insane to say. It was a normal operating procedure every single year in the book. Somebody, every single year that I was in a book in Vegas, bet a five-figure bet, 10 dimes or more, $10,000 or more on the coin flip, Josh, believe it or not. And it's normal.
Dave, you have also taken bets, I believe, from Floyd Mayweather. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Floyd is one of my guys. He just he was the first one that, like, owned the whole space. And, I mean, he was our, you know, biggest customer. We did whatever Floyd wanted. Floyd would sometimes show up with two behemoth bodyguards and a really nice bag full of cash and come and dump it on the counter and say, I want to bet it all on the Patriots. And we're like, do you know how much is there? He said, you guys know you got the money counters. It would count it, and it would be six figures. There were other times he came in by himself. In the morning, he was such a, like, mental, strong guy. Like, he would train overnight, and I was opening the book a lot of times. So he'd come in at 6 in the morning. I'd come in to go get the opening bank. He'd be waiting there to bet a basketball game or something. Dave, what's up? How long are you going to be? Champ, let me count the money. I'll be here. I'll be back in 20 minutes. Okay, I'll wait for you. He'd be pacing. I'm sitting there counting the money, trying to get the bank set. You ready? Just give me 3 minutes, champ. Hold on 1 second. You know, boom, bet, gone, fist bump, ticket, out, done. It was a regular thing, and he was always super, super generous when he won. He wasn't always the best bettor, but he was the first one in my Vegas time to put it out there. I mean, he put his tickets out there for everybody to see, told everybody about it. Very flamboyant. He liked to let everybody know that he was in the book, brought the bag up to the counter. You had to shut the window down wherever he was at because, you know, when someone drops $100,000 on your counter, you got to run it through, make sure it's all there. And yeah, he was great, man. He took pictures with my kids. I've seen him out now since he's retired. It's always a fist bump and a bro hug and, you know, how are you doing? Good. How are you doing? Good. And it's amazing who you meet in the book.
I've seen him post those tickets. I have never seen him post a losing ticket. Sounds like maybe there were a couple of those too.
Oh, for sure. That was the beauty. I mean, he really held that undefeated thing close to his heart as far as boxing. Well, he couldn't let anybody know he lost a losing bet, Josh. Come on. I mean, he's in all the time. Champ, you got to post them losers too, you know? No, I don't. That's my account. I can do what I want. You're right. You can do whatever you want. So, yeah, he didn't win every bet he made. Nobody does. No matter what anybody tells you, even the great Billy Walters never won every bet that he always made.
Okay, last one I've got for you, Dave. I've heard you tell the story before, but it's so good. I'm hoping you wouldn't mind repeating it. Can you please tell me about the biggest bet, or I guess in this case it's bets, that you ever took? Tell me that story.
Yeah. So the Yahoo Sportsbook actually put this to video. If you had to do hashtag story time from the book. 2011, Steelers are playing the Packers in a Super Bowl. I opened the book at 6:30. After 2 weeks of craziness, nonsense, we had people coming from all over the country betting great amounts of money. I'm spent. Plus, I'm holding a 25-to-1 ticket on the Steelers to win the Super Bowl because that's where I'm from. It's nighttime in Pittsburgh behind me. I want the Steelers to win. I've been doing nothing but Green Bay bets, what it feels like, for 2 weeks. Guy walks up to the counter at 6:32, literally the first person of the day. It's me and a supervisor. The other woman is setting her window up. He says, I want to bet the Super Bowl. I said, sure you do, buddy. All right, what do you need? He said, I want to bet the Packers. Okay, how do you want to bet it? How much? He said, well, I'm really not sure. I want to do points or money line. All right, well, how much do you want to bet? And he says, $1 million. I said, $1 million. Now, we had it out on the marquee out at the end. We're taking $1 million on the game. Come in and bet it. You've had a lot of looky-loos, a lot of inquiries all week. Oh, I want to bet this. I want to bet that. This guy doesn't have $1 million. I said, okay, buddy. When you get the money, just come back, and we'll take the bet. He goes, okay. Disappears from the counter like this. Pops up in a bag right on my counter. I'm like, you got the money right now? He says, it's in the bag. Wow. Okay. He got me. I wasn't expecting that. Unzipped the bag, shrunk wrap perfectly, tight straps. Whoever did this job, it had to be directly from the bank. It was perfect. I opened it up. I'm like, wow, the whole thing's in here. You don't have another bag. He's like, no, it's in there.
How big is the bag?
A nice size duffel bag, but not exceptionally big. It's like a bag you might probably pack for like a weekend trip where you might have multiple, you know, uniform changes or outfits. So I'm like, okay, boom. Open the bag. Got to open the Ziploc, the plastic shrink wrap. And I said to the other guy that was with me, you take half, go down there. I'll take half and go down here. We start running the money. Run it. 1.1 million. I'll be right back. I go in the back in the risk room. I'm like, hey, there's a guy out here. He's got 1.1 million. He wants to bet the Packers. Get out of here. 6:48 in the morning. I'm like, he's out there right now. And they're like, who's the guy? I'm like, I have no idea. I didn't even ask his name. They're like, the money's good. I said, yeah. He wants to lay 2.5. Yes. All right, take the bet. So I go outside, print the ticket. I had to, so I give him the ticket, and he's like, nervous. I said, you stay in for the game. You got a VIP seat up here. You get whatever you want. We'll write you comps. He's like, no, I don't even want to watch the game. I just bet $1.1 million on it. I'm going to go. I don't even think I'm going to watch it. I was like, all right, cool. See you later. Get the money in a drawer and have to like wedge it in there because you don't really usually get $1.1 million in the drawer. 18 minutes later, it's not even an exaggeration. I remember it like it was yesterday. 18 minutes later, a guy who hung out in the book was moving money, doing all kinds of stuff, whatever. Dave. We went from 2.5 minus 110, Josh, to 2.5 minus 120. Couldn't go to 3 because it's a Super Bowl, and we knew what would come on the 3. So instead, we went to 2.5 even money.
You're moving the line because you just took such a large bet.
Right. We're not moving the point spread. We're moving the juice. So now if you want to come bet the Packers after that, you have to lay minus 120 instead of minus 110, which means you could bet the Steelers, get 2.5 points, and take even money.
You were encouraging bets on the Steelers.
Needed bets on the Steelers at this point. That was a gigantic position to be in. Guy comes running in and says, Davey. Yes, what do you want? I want the Steelers. I'm like, of course you do. I mean, that was like sending a bat signal to all the sharps and the wise guys. We have 2.5 even money on the Super Bowl. If you have money, we'll take it. Get here quick because I don't know how long it's going to last. This guy was the first one in. He said, I'll take the Steelers. Of course. How much? $1 million. I started laughing. I said, can't be serious. Really? He says, yeah, $1 million. Print it. Oh, my goodness. Okay, hold on. Go in the back. I'm like, you're not going to believe it, but your man's out here and wants to bet $1 million on the Steelers even money. And they're like, really? Did you count the money yet? I said, no. I said, I haven't. He says, count the money. Make sure it's all there. Print the ticket. Okay. I looked out at the supervisor again. I'm like, you're not going to believe this. Come over here. He's drinking coffee. He just, you know, he was getting the day's paperwork set. I'm like, he wants to bet $1 million on the Steelers even money. He's like, again? I said, yeah, let's go. Take this half. So this guy pulls out a bag. Now, this was like a suitcase, and it was like, I don't know. This might have been buried in a desert somewhere, Josh. This was not a trunk thing from the bank. This was dirty, dusty money. It was rubber banded. It was tied together. I don't know where this came from. Didn't ask. It's like in the movie The Godfather, nobody asked who gave the order. We didn't ask where it came from. We just counted it and put it in a drawer. $1 million cash. 18 minutes later on the Steelers. And now I got to fit this in a drawer. Impossible. I don't have enough room. I the person next to me was just coming in. They started at 8:30. I'm like, or 7:30. I said, you guys got to wait. I got to get this money. Call for an escort. We take all that money, 2.1, to the cage to deposit it. Come back, catch my breath, open my window back up. And I'm telling you, a guy says, all right, I want to make a bet. I'm like, okay, what do you got? He said, 18 parlay. I'm like, 18 parlay? Oh, boy. So he picks, like, the Capitals were playing that day. I remember that because they were playing the Penguins. I got a basketball game over. He's all over the board. It takes, I swear, 8 minutes to type a bet, which is an eternity. And I said, all right, man, how much do you want on a parlay? He goes, $5. I'm like, $5. Okay. Print the ticket, handed it to them, and I got a story for a lifetime. I got handled $2.1 million within 18 minutes, and then the next bet was an 18 parlay for $5. that was the story, man. That was one of my original ones where I was like, I'm writing a book someday.
Absolutely incredible story. And just to put a bow on it, the first guy who bet on the Packers won, correct?
Yes. Packers ended up winning. Steelers should have won that game, Josh, but I can't remember the running back's name at the time. He fumbled the ball. It was Aaron Rodgers' only Super Bowl. But yes, he won the bet. And I didn't see him when he came in. I was off on Monday, but he came in to collect. He left a very nice tip. Said to leave the guy that took my bet, you know, tell him I said thank you. Never saw the guy again, ever.
Dave, absolutely awesome stuff. Love this. Plug away, please. Where can people find you?
So every day I do a show from 10 to 11:30 Pacific. It's called Bostonian versus the Book. My co-host is named Matt Perrault. We go back and forth with daily what's going on in the sports betting business, games. There's a bet it or book it segment at the end where he bets something and I tell him I'll bet it or book it, which means I'll go against him. Then I'm on Sports Grid and Sirius XM every day from 4 to 7 Pacific, which is 7 to 10 Eastern, on a show called In Game Live. That's available wherever you have, you know, smart TVs. It's on TV. It's on radio. It's all over the place. Basically, it's me sitting in a book, watching a game, looking at the lines, going, now's a good time to get in. No, maybe wait. Why do you believe that just happened? How is that going to affect the line? It's everything that I've ever done without having to sit in front of a wrist screen and take bets on, say, the College of Charleston and Northeastern tonight. It's a bit of a relief that I don't have to sweat the games. And then everything else that I do, I start my own YouTube channel. It's called Cash Considerations, Cash Considerations Podcast on YouTube. I do a weekly show, a couple different weekly shows with some friends of mine that have been in the business for a while or are trying to get in the business, young guys, old guys. Live the life every day. Talk about it every day. Have zero agenda as far as like trying to be on this guy's side or, you know, downplay this book or whatever. We're talking about the business. We're talking about sports and we're talking about life every single day.
Dave Sherapin, I sure am glad that a couple years back you made the switch from running a book to being on the media side of things, because these are some fantastic stories. Thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, brother. Thanks for having me. It's great meeting you, and looking forward to the next time.
Same here. There it is, ladies and gents. Really fun episode. Hope everybody enjoyed it. Also, I am really, really excited for some of the guests we've got coming. I'm still ironing out dates for some of the people, so I don't want to announce anything specific just yet, but keep tuning in. It's gonna be good. As always, thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. IG at Rambling and Gambling. Email ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. See you next Wednesday, everybody. Have a great week.